Hello, this is Tuesday, September 1st, and it's news to me. I've got a bunch of stories, not a ton internationally, but oh boy, the United States is going nuts. So let's go ahead here and get on into our world
news.
So here we go. First up, I hope this loaded in the right order, and it did. Beautiful. All right, so first up, this is a bit of an oddity. BBC is reporting for us, heart of Belgian city mayor found entombed in a fountain. That's right, an ornate fountain in Verviers, eastern Belgium, has given up an object it held for more than a century, the heart of the city's first mayor. The organ was sealed in a jar of alcohol inside a small zinc casket and was found during renovation of the fountain. The casket is now on show in the city's Museum of Fine Arts. Mayor Pierre David died in 1839, but the fountain named after him was only inaugurated in 1883. An engraving on the casket says it was placed in the monument at the time. The heart of Pierre David was solemnly placed in the monument on 25th June 1883, it reads. Ooh, excuse me, I sneezed. So, it's pretty cool. You can check out an image of the casket on the BBC website. Coming to us from France, again on the BBC, the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo has republished cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad that made them the target of a deadly terror attack in 2015. The republication comes a day before 14 people go on trial accused of helping the two Islamic attackers carry out their rampage on January 7th, 2015. 12 people were attacked, including cartoonists. 5 people died in a related attack in Paris days later. So, it's kind of an interesting way to commemorate it. And now we go south a little bit to Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe has offered returned land to foreign nationals whose farms were seized under a controversial government program 2 decades ago. Thousands of white farmers were forced from their land, often violently, between 2000 and 2001. The seizures were meant to redress colonial-era land grabs, but contributed to the country's economic decline and ruined relations with the West. A separate compensation scheme has been launched for local white farmers. They have not been offered land, but the government last month promised them $3.5 billion, or £2.6 billion, for seized infrastructure. The U.S. has said compensating farmers is one of the requirements for it to lift decades of economic sanctions. So this is a very positive movement, I guess we could say. And our last international specific story comes from The Guardian and out of the Philippines, which has a lot of interesting laws, a bit of zaniness. You know, it's very scary. I would never want to travel there during Duterte's reign. But the headline reads, "If it's drugs, you shoot and kill." Duterte ordered Philippine custom chief. So the president has publicly ordered the country's top customs official to shoot and kill drug smugglers in one of his most overt threats during a deadly 4-year campaign that has been the centerpiece of his presidency. Duterte has denied authorizing extrajudicial killings, but has repeatedly and openly threatened drug dealers with death. He and the National Police, which has led enforcement of his anti-drug campaign, said most of the suspects killed by police during the campaign fought back and threatened the lives of law enforcers. Duterte gave the order to the commissioner of the Customs Bureau, Ray Leonardo Guerrero, in televised remarks from a cabinet meeting on the coronavirus pandemic on Monday night. And you know what? Don't worry. We've got lots of COVID news to get into. But thanks for listening. I'm glad Anon Radio has agreed to broadcast me again. Big shout out to Calm. We got Ixer in the house, SMJ, Exiled, X1, the whole crew. Good times. JSTJ in the mix. Aw, man. So let's see what we got. Oh, and there's Tobe. He summoned me with Mati power. It did. Oh, aw. I was not there at 1900. I wasn't connected on the dot because I was, anyway, it's a long story. All right. Well, let's go on and look at some of our domestic news. We don't have a domestic thing. So look, here, I'll read the one tech story right now.
Is it time for tech news?
Oh, yeah, it is. And let's just see if I can find it while I scroll through all of my tabs here. Doot, doot, doot. We got our Amazon. Our friends Amazon made the news. Let's see what we got here. Where are you? Doo doo. Feds, cops, 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 cops. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Reason put this story out. Nobody else was talking about it. But the feds have finally given Amazon permission for drone deliveries in the U.S. So, good news for both lovers of tech innovation and pandemic social distancing. Drone deliveries are set to expand in the U.S. When the pandemic came to America in March and April, many jurisdictions issued broad orders to shelter in place. Home delivery services were hit hard by an explosion in demand, and they lacked the manpower to respond. Stores and delivery services like Instacart went on hiring sprees. In some areas, it was extremely hard, if not impossible, to get goods delivered. So, what we've got here is the FAA did this, approved it, Bloomberg is reporting, by classifying Amazon as an air carrier and putting it under the scope of some relatively recent regulations intended to facilitate drone deliveries. The extremely restrictive private drone rules the FAA first put into place required that drones remain in sight of the operator at all times. That simply won't work for drone deliveries, so last year the agency introduced a special certification process that would allow approved pilots to operate drones from much longer distances specifically for deliveries. Wing Aviation, a subsidiary of Google, got some of the first certifications and started a pilot program to deliver food and pharmaceuticals in Virginia. Today's announcement means Amazon will be able to join Google in drone deliveries. The company isn't ready to start sending out delivery drones immediately, and it has declined to state where such deliveries will begin. But last year, it revealed its fleet can carry packages of up to 5 pounds and can deliver in a 15-mile range in less than 30 minutes. The FAA also granted Zipline a temporary waiver letting the company deliver medical supplies in North Carolina. So, this is pretty cool. So, we shall see what's going on there. Yeah, it's possible that people might start shooting these guys down if they're carrying, you know, your $5,000 laptop or something. But it will be neat. So, that is kind of the broader news, you know, kind of so you can be a well-rounded individual. I've got one other, like, general story, then we'll play a song and get into the mess that's the U.S. So our friends at Truthout, it's an independent news outlet, does a lot of cool longer form journalism. They have a piece called Co-ops Can Lay a Path to Just Economies Amid the COVID Crisis. And so just a short, the first couple paragraphs here is the cooperatives are showing greater resilience than traditional enterprises in Argentina amid COVID-19 crisis, in the same way as employee-owned companies did in the U.S. during the Great Recession, producing COVID tests, masks, and disinfectant, and directly meeting the needs of their workers and communities. The cooperatives of Argentina, many of which underwent a rapid conversion from capitalist firms to cooperatives in the class struggle of the early 2000s, provide an inspiring example of how we can face the COVID challenge with solidarity. In 2020, co-ops have produced almost 10% of the Argentine GDP. Among them are approximately 400 empresas recuperadas, recovered companies, supporting 18,000 jobs across all sectors. The factories were rescued from bankrupt owners by worker takeover. In many cases, workers stayed without salaries for months and were fired without severance pay. Many owners planned fraudulent bankruptcies, looting their business for years. So it goes on to explain how they did it and what was all involved. At truthout.org. It's one of their cover stories for the day. So it is pretty cool. So that's pretty cool. What do we got here? Calm is pretty active today, which is awesome. If you want to participate in Calm, all you got to do is SSH to SDF, enter the command COM, hit enter. You're in Calm now. Congratulations. Type G for go. Type Anon Radio, all one word, and hit enter. Bam, you are now in the Anon Radio room on Calm, and you can do all sorts of fun and cool stuff. Just press H if you need help, and have fun. There's tons to do and lots of people to talk to. All right. I'm so glad that this is running smoothly. It's just like, heck yeah. So let's just go over here. Do, 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 do. I'm thinking of a word. Sorry, sometimes it takes me a second to change gears from work mode to news mode to music mode. It's all part of the adventure. Anyway, we're gonna play a song from a band that I know, or I know these people. They're called Teenage Cave Girl, and this is their debut album called Candy Cigarettes. This song is gonna be called, it's called They're Gonna Get Ya.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Yes, yes you are. And this is news to me. We've got some great stories, and you know, they're gonna get you because they are, and they are the man. So our first story comes from Counterpunch, and this is about Albuquerque cops cooperating with ICE and Operation Relentless. And Operation Relentless Pursuit, despite city sanctuary policy. What does that mean? Well, December 2019, if you feel so long ago, the U.S. Department of Justice, Justice Department, announced a joint local federal law enforcement operation called Operation Relentless Pursuit for seven cities: Detroit, Memphis, Baltimore, Kansas City, Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Albuquerque. Agents from the FBI, the ATF, and the DEA, as well as the U.S. Marshals, joined together with the local police to target gangs, drug trafficking, and other violent crime. City and federal officials would later claim that nothing came from Operation Relentless Pursuit in Albuquerque because the city refused to coordinate with ICE. Albuquerque's sanctuary policies declares it an immigrant-friendly city, and it prohibits all city agencies, departments, officers, employees, or agents from using city resources, monies, equipment, personnel, or city facilities to assist in or otherwise facilitate the enforcement of federal immigration law or in the investigation, detection, apprehension, or detention of an individual based on the real or perceived immigration status of an individual. But despite its claims, it came to nothing. The arrival of Relentless Pursuit in New Mexico corresponded to a surge in ICE raids and detentions throughout northern New Mexico, including in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, beginning in February. At the time, the Senators Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich complained to the acting director of ICE. The letter implied local police were not involved in the raids, and Albuquerque's sanctuary policy would seem to confirm this. But as we reported last week, nearly everything that officials from the Department of Justice and the city of Albuquerque said about Operation Legend in July turned out to be inaccurate or misleading. So, there you have it. The federal government, I mean, they're going to do what they want to do, and they disregard state and local laws. So, there you go. You can read the full story at counterpunch.org. All right. So, we'll go through some of these a little quicker just because they're longer, and they're just more wordy. I think that's just because that's how news sites get you. They want your eyeballs on stuff. So let's run through it. There is a new yes man on Trump's COVID task force. So this is from Democracy Now, you know, where they, which way they lean. as the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the U.S. passes 6 million, with the death toll over 183,000, the administration's loosening coronavirus restrictions, fast-tracking vaccine approval, and disregarding safety tests. And now, one of Trump's top medical advisors is pushing for the country to adopt a controversial herd immunity strategy, raising alarm among public health officials. Washington Post health reporter Yasmin Abutaleb says Dr. Scott Atlas is not an epidemiologist and was brought on specifically because he would back President Trump's position about how the pandemic was going. So they also spoke with Yale epidemiologist Greg Gonsalves, who argued the U.S. is already following an implicit herd immunity policy. They realize it's politically toxic, so they don't want to use the phrase. But if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck, he said. So you can read or watch the full interview that they had. It is 35 minutes long, and it's at Democracy Now! Oh, yeah! I'm excited! Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe coming up in about 12 minutes. Ooh, yeah. But for right now, don't forget, you're listening to...
This is News to Me with DJ Marcus.
That's me. Somebody else said my name. All right. And we can't... let's just keep going. Now it's time to get heavy into the COVID-19 disease news. Because there's so much going on. So much. All right. So In These Times has a story called COVID-19 Hunger Strike Sweep Migrant Detention Centers. See how this is all weaving together? It's like you can almost follow the thread of my thoughts as I was reading the news today. So out of Tacoma, Washington, despite the risk to his health amid the pandemic, Daniel Lopez is languishing in immigrant detention because his presence makes money for the private prison company GEO Group. To them, we're just commodities for their business, Lopez, a 32-year-old immigrant from Baja California, Mexico, says. Baja California, Mexico. I didn't know that was a city in Mexico. That's neat. He's speaking from the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington, a jail-like facility owned by GEO Group, the corporation that receives more taxpayer dollars for immigration detention than any other ICE contractor. We are forced to work here, Lopez says, $1 per day. He describes it as a trap. The meals, often rotten, come in small portions. If detainees want to eat something else, they have to work for it. Everything they sell is overpriced. The potentially catastrophic impact of COVID-19 in jails has intensified the feeling of abuse of many detained immigrants. It has also spurred an uprising that mirrors growing political and social movements across the U.S. Nearly 2,500 people have joined COVID-19-related hunger strikes in detention centers nationwide since March. That's Detention Watch Network did that, gave us that number. All these struggles are connected, says Daisy Carrillo Lopez, a legal assistant to Centro Legal. Nearly 70 detained people launched a 7-day hunger strike at the beginning of July to warn of the dangers of COVID-19 at Mesa Verde. And then the story goes on to outline a few other people that are a few other groups that are also doing hunger strikes, and how that's happening. So you can read more at In These Times, but I thought that was very interesting that people in those centers were organizing. All right, let's keep on rolling through the sad news to me. Uh-oh. The cat. Uh-oh. It's not Momo. No. Shift G. What does Shift G do? Oh, hit points 1. Alignment neutral. Oh, no. I wonder, what does that mean? Can someone explain? Anyway. It's all groovy. It seems like there's a lot going on. Sorry. So let's jump through some more news. Deep breaths. We only have 1, 2, 3, 4. We only have about a dozen stories propped up. Let's break the chain of thought. There we go. Thought chain. So, Biden condemns lawlessness and calls for safety from 4 more years. So, this is a headline roundup from all sides, that side I like so much. And Joe Biden condemned and criticized Donald Trump's leadership during a visit to a Pittsburgh steel mill on Monday. Biden said rioting, looting, and setting fires is not protesting, it's lawlessness, plain and simple. It divides instead of unites. Biden went on to criticize Trump, saying his divisive speech is to blame for fomenting polarization and violence. Some left-rated outlets tend to focus on Biden's condemnation of violence and his emphasis on unity, and left- and center-rated outlets frame Biden's speech as having put the spotlight on Trump or blaming Trump for the violence. Coverage from the right focused more on Biden's criticism of Trump, intended to frame Biden as being defensive of his stances on recent violence that has descended from protests. So neither side really has a fair, a neutral approach. And what are you going to get whenever you're having political speeches, right? Oh, yeah. All right. Next step, their other CDC, or another story on all sides, was the CDC's updated COVID-19 numbers are being misinterpreted. So a weekly update from the CDC reported that 94% of Americans who died from COVID-19 also had other types of health conditions and contributing causes, when only 6% of COVID-related deaths cited the virus as the only cause of death. Some of the other health conditions include influenza and pneumonia, respiratory failure and respiratory arrest, and cardiac arrest and heart failure, CDC said. Over the weekend, Trump tweeted a post by a QAnon supporter suggesting that the CDC updated the site that it had previously inflated the death toll. So then QAnon did what QAnon does, and it spread all over the place and got Trump to retweet it. And then coverage from the left and center-rated outlets focused on combating misinterpretations. And some left-rated outlets and fact-checkers focused specifically on the president's retweeting of the data, which was subsequently censored by Twitter. Coverage from the right tended to frame the new data as evidence the virus effects have purportedly been exaggerated. So, welcome and goodbye, X1. It seems that X1 has transited the array. Wow. Whoa, what is this? And then PCOM happened, and SDF experienced Kant's perpetual peace. Magic. PCOM ruins everything. I don't know what's happening. I am just going to stop looking at COM. But welcome back, X1. Oh, boy. We've got just about 6 minutes to go before it is Tobe time and the Dubious Goals Committee, where our GFVs live. And one day, Numbers Lady will feel better and she'll come back. All right. Let's jump through our headlines in a bit of a quicker fashion. Rewire.news tells us, has this headline, "This Trump judge just told photographers they could discriminate against LGBTQ folks." So Judge Justin Walker isn't actually qualified to be a judge, but Trump picked him for the federal bench. Because, you know, appointed judges don't have to be lawyers or even be judges or anything. They could just be like their uncle or whatever. So Judge Justin Walker will soon be ascending to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, but he's first inflicting maximum damage in Western Kentucky's federal court on his way out. In mid-August, Walker ruled in favor of an anti-LGBTQ conservative Christian photographer, Chelsea Nixon, who doesn't want to photograph same-sex weddings. She also wants to advertise on her website that she will only photograph opposite-sex ceremonies. Nelson is based in Louisville, which has a fairness ordinance prohibiting discrimination based on sex, gender identity, or orientation. In his ruling, Walker held that requiring Nelson to photograph a same-sex couple would violate her First Amendment rights because she believes marriage can only be between a man and a woman. The case was a conservative cause célèbre. Longtime anti-LGBTQ law firm Alliance Defending Freedom brought the case, while the Department of Justice joined in filing a brief declaring that weddings are sacred rights in the religious realm. So, that's kind of what's happening. So that we know that we can enjoy this for many years to come, the average age of federal judges on the bench right now is 69. Nice. If Walker, currently 38, serves for the average duration, we're looking at 30 years of his conservatism, elevating religion above health and human rights. So you can read the full story at rewire.news. That was not a brief or abbreviated. Sorry about that. Sometimes I forget and I just am like, you gotta hear this. All right. So dissentmagazine.org has Detroit battles nursing home workers delay strike. Basically, the workers in the nursing homes were going to strike. Everyone begged them, please don't strike. All these people are going to die. And so they said, okay. And so they're putting off their strike for 30 days while the negotiations on their contract continue. Mother Jones is reporting that California needs more firefighters, but like we talked about last week, skilled former inmates cannot be firefighters, because if you've been to prison, and you can't be a firefighter, but you can be conscripted to be a firefighter. So they can force you to be one while in prison, but then you can't be one when you get out, even if they need you desperately. So anyway, that's from Mother Jones if you want to get the whole story. Let's see here. Cornell University is saying that it's not very smart, because they're reporting that Cornell University is going to reopen this fall despite opposition from the community. The school is the only Ivy League university that will be reopening, leaving students and community members concerned for their safety. So that's pretty rough there. Also, not in the story, but not in the headline I have, but lots of NYU students, they're currently starving in their dorms because they're not supposed to leave their dorm rooms. They're supposed to take classes remotely, and the food in the food for them is brought and left at their door, but they're being given like rotten food or food they're allergic to or food that they can't eat. Like vegetarians are given steaks, and people who have nut allergies are given peanuts, that kind of stuff. So pretty crazy. LA sheriff's deputies shot a black man for riding a bicycle. They say they saw the man riding a bicycle in violation of vehicle codes and chased him and shot him. So not really a big surprise, but just a heads up. Don't ride a bicycle and be black in Los Angeles, or I guess anywhere in the U.S. right now. The Guardian's reporting a woman, a black woman from Arizona, is still suffering from second-degree burns because police officers pinned her to hot asphalt last year. And, yeah, so she got detained and she was hurt. She didn't do anything wrong either. Our dear president and leader stormed out of a press conference after pressed on his support for a murderous teenager in Kenosha. So President Trump on Monday was grilled about why he was not condemned Kyle Rittenhouse, who has been charged for murder after traveling across state lines to confront protesters. "This was an interesting situation," said Trump. "He was trying to get away from them, and then they very violently attacked him." So you can see all the shenanigans there on Raw Story. We're running out of time. We got about 20 seconds to go before it's outro time. And then Tobe and the Dubious Goals Committee, because that show is on time and always starts at 19:30 UTC. If you don't know what time it is, tune in to Anon Radio. Is Tobe on? It is sometime between 19:30 UTC and 20 UTC. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we had a bunch of other stories, so I'm just going to read the headlines. The inevitable white lash against racial justice has started. That's on The Nation. House Oversight Committee subpoenaed documents on deliberate sabotage of the Postal Service from Salon. Kentucky authorities offered leniency to Breonna Taylor's ex if he'd implicate her in drug crimes. And that's all we got time for. Thanks for listening. Well, thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Begin transmission.
Commitment to delivering you a remarkable experience. This call may be monitored or recorded.
It's 6:54 p.m.
6:54 is, of course, 4:56 backwards, but that just doesn't matter. The actual time is 19:30 UTC, and this is, of course, the traditional time for beginning the Dubious Goals Committee. Hello, and welcome to the Dubious Goals Committee. My name is Tobe. I'm the chairman of this committee. And whereas that sounds like quite the authoritative title, all it really means is that I'm the guy drinking the tea.